We are back in Kevin's garage.
Yes.
After a little Keystone Cops kind of evening.
It's nostalgia night here at the podcast. We weren't exactly sure at the beginning that we were going to be recording here, but thankfully all running around ends well, and so welcome back to Shangri-La, everybody.
Yeah, I kind of feel like some like sure Benny Hill happened. Theme music should be playing.
Oh, of us driving around?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, have you rewatched, since I sent it to you the first time, the
Ravers?
The Ravers. And
I've watched that many times.
I watched it the other
day. It's never not funny.
Have you guys seen that stuff?
What's it about?
It's a bunch of, like, blissed out,
oh, I
drugged
know exactly
out,
what you're
yeah,
about.
Raver
the
kid.
Theme. To the Benny Hill music.
Yeah, no, it's great. And entirely on beat.
Genius.
It's pretty genius. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm glad that we have this. Do we use this lamp?
No, I asked because when it looked like we were going to record elsewhere, it's usually pretty dark in there.
Oh, that's
so
true.
And I typically bring a lamp with me, and I just got out of the house without one. So
it's quite stylish.
It is stylish.
I was thinking about stealing it.
Maybe even mod, like a little mod.
It's definitely 60s inspired.
Mid-century.
I like
sure.
it.
Sure. Yeah.
Are you trying to...
I think it was in Rhoda's apartment on the Mary Tyler Moore show.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's just because it's got some avocado working.
Yeah. That has that color of green.
Yes.
We should probably get into some theme.
Yeah, we have a lot to talk about today. So I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
And Mark.
Somebody likes it.
Last night were the VMA Awards, and I didn't watch them. I've heard a lot of commentary on the VMA Awards today, and I know that it might be something that we'd want to talk about a little bit, but I really have, just from the secondary shit that I've heard about, I really have two takeaways. One, I don't really know the purpose of the VMA Awards.
Thank like, you.
Well, they don't actually show videos on MTV anymore.
They do have other MTV channels that do.
Yeah.
M2, I think.
Maybe they should. Three, and there's like MTV.
Maybe they should do the awards on that.
Yeah, some shit.
One of those channels then. But so there's that. And then the second thing is apparently at some point during a long and, putting it politely, fucking crazy speech made by Kanye West last night.
We're going to share some of that.
He announced that he was running for president in 2020. And all I have to say is, please run. Please, I am begging you.
Like, yeah, if we thought this Trump candidacy was entertaining.
God, can you imagine if the two of them ran
that's
in
already
the same
come up.
Year?
I've already heard other people like talking about the exact same thing. It's just like this pile
Dream
of hair.
Ticket.
This like angry pile of hair against the craziest man you've ever seen in your life. I think that would be, seriously, that's like, it's a reality show already.
I was playing trivia one time, and one of the category or the like categories or rounds of them was who said it. Kanye West or Tracy Jordan.
and the fact so that it's close. Like,
I got 50% or less right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I had no idea. Like, it's
just a stab in the dark.
Just insane. Just insanity comes out of this dude's mouth, man. But, yeah. So, did anybody watch any of it last night?
All I've seen is photos of Miley Cyrus's various states of undress.
Miley Cyrus, like, trying desperately hard to make a ripple somewhere, like just really lame. And once she had like red dreadlocks or some shit, I don't know. Her titty came out at some point.
She looked like fireworks the last time that I saw a picture of her. Like,
I mean, she's
like,
got a nice body, like uncle, but I don't really want to hear what comes
and
out
I don't,
of her face.
I don't mean like
she's so lame.
I don't mean like fireworks in a celebratory sense. I mean like her like what she was dressed in and her hair looked like. She was trying to physically approximate what fireworks look like in the air. Anyway,
Jesus Christ.
It was just
I
weird.
Thought when you said she looked like fireworks, like when somebody, like if there's like a warehouse storing fireworks and they accidentally all go off and it's just horrible. I thought you're...
Oh, yeah.
Is it considered state of trans if you're like you were born in a woman's body but you were meant to be a drag queen? Is that a thing?
Is that like is that a double negative? How does that even work? Like, I don't know.
Good question.
It's Ryan with the Funhouse Mirror question of the evening. I don't know.
Deep thoughts. Yeah,
that's right.
I'd like to read a little bit of Kanye West's now infamous famous speech.
Yes.
Which I hadn't seen any of until we all got together, but I've been reading about it all day.
Grab a seat at the pew, everybody.
Yeah, I'm not going to read the whole thing. I've got the full transcript here, but I'm going to read you some of what I consider to be highlights. Starting with the beginning of it, he goes, bro, listen to the kids. And then he's talking about Taylor Swift. And then he goes, and I think if I had to do it all over again, what would I have done? I'm sure he said it exactly like how I'm saying it right now.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Would I have worn a leather shirt? Would I have drank half a bottle of Hennessy and gave the rest of it to the audience? Y'all know y'all drink that bottle, too. If I had a daughter at the time, would I have gone on stage and grabbed the mic from someone else's? You know, this arena tomorrow. I don't know. Then he's going on.
Then he's going on.
Pootie Tang.
Yeah.
Then it gets weird.
And then he goes, this arena tomorrow is going to be a completely different setup. Some concert, something like that. The stage will be gone. If it's a concert, the stage will be gone. I don't know. After that night, the stage was gone, but the effect it had on people remained. The problem was the contradiction. The contradiction is I do fight for artists, but then I fight somehow. So he's referencing, obviously, the Taylor Swift when he jumped off
debacle.
Stage.
And, yeah.
Yeah. He goes, I don't understand when the biggest album or the biggest video, I've been conflicted, bro. I just wanted people to like me more. But fuck that, bro. 2015, I will die for the art. For what I believe in, and the art ain't always going to be polite. Y'all might be thinking right now, did he smoke something before he came out here? The answer is yes. I rolled up a little something. I knocked the edge off.
Not all of the edge.
No, clearly. If my grandfather was here right now, he would not let me back down. I don't know if I'm fitting to lose after this. It don't matter, though, because it ain't about me. It's about ideas, bro. New ideas, people with ideas, people who believe in truth. And yes, as you probably could have guessed by this moment, I have decided in 2020 to run for president.
Yeah, that shit totally happened. And the best part was, apparently, like in one of the...
It goes on and on, too. It was 11 minutes.
Yeah, and one of the recaps that I heard about today, they said the best part was like, so he goes up there and they're giving him a lifetime. First of all, it's a lifetime achievement award and he's 38. So if you ever wonder about like, hey, maybe the VMAs doesn't really have it together in a real sense, like that might be a key right there.
Also, like, he was saying in the speech, and I didn't read this stuff, but he kept saying like, we the millennials, no.
No, you the Generation X.
You're not the millennial.
Yeah, exactly. But so anyway, so they're like, so the best part was like, if you're watching it, it's like, he goes up there, they give him this lifetime, Taylor Swift gives him this Lifetime Achievement Award, which is supposed to, I guess, close the loop on him usurping her, winning something a long time ago, whatever, he's an idiot. So
he's an interesting idiot.
He is an interesting idiot, but he's an idiot. So he goes up there, she gives him the thing, they hug, apparently, and then she goes down and stands, like, I guess, with the Kardashian crew, and apparently he starts to speak, and then they cut down to the Kardashian crew and Taylor Swift, and they all realize at the same time that he's going off script, and all of their faces fall. Like, just like, oh like,
fuck.
Eric, grab the reins, man. Anyway, like, they did a thing. They were talking, one of the places where, I heard this on a few channels, but one of the places where they were talking about this morning for a little while was the Stern Show, and I think that it's funny that you guys were talking about the Benny Hill theme because that's what they started playing like as a music bed behind what he was saying, like, and it sort of fit. So whatever.
Well, all I kept thinking was boo.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Y'all think? I smoked something. I rolled something up. Mm-hmm. Took the edge off.
No, it sounds like your buddy Big Daddy. Like, what are you giving a national stage?
No, it would have been endlessly rambling, even more than that. Let's. You picked the record this week.
I did pick this week's record.
And why don't you tell us a little bit
about it? I thought
I
Want to Be Your Dog was on it. It is not.
It is not.
But it is a highly influential record, and this is, of course, Raw Power by Iggy and the Stooges.
Oh, yeah.
as though you're hearing about it.
I've heard of it.
Oh, yeah. Was I supposed to listen to that?
That Iggy and the Pops are great.
I'm sure that's what Dad would call it.
It's probably, yeah.
I loved it.
No, it's a good record. It's not long on melody, but it is long on like attitude and riffs. And
yeah, but I think like
it's the kind of thing that would be a blast to see performed live.
It's the kind of thing that like that I imagine would be great to just like put in a bunch of money at a shitty dive bar and play the whole record in its entirety on the jukebox.
Sure.
It was really entertaining. Did you guys happen to listen to both of the mixes that were?
I think I only listened to the one that came up when I put it in.
No, I didn't listen to both the mixes. Can I just say before we dive into this that Iggy Pop is one of those guys that like. Everybody always says this about Keith Richards, but I kind of almost think this more of Iggy Pop. It's like, that guy shouldn't be alive.
I knew you were going to say that.
And it's the kind of thing if it would have been some sort of, you know, whatever, Gigi Allen thing or like somewhere like years ago, like there was some sort of tragic situation, everybody would go like, oh, yeah, clearly that's how that guy lived.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you this, man. I mean, he looks a lot better.
I saw him play at South by like 10 years ago, and he would have been in his like late 50s. The man's old.
Yeah.
But he was running around like a kid and like stave diving and you know, like crowd surfing and the whole thing, like just running around like he was 20 years old.
Yeah, I mean, anybody that's like in their mid to late 60s that's primary mode of performing shows is shirtless still.
Sure.
I mean, the guy takes care of himself.
Shirtless, running around. Well, my girlfriend has a theory that he's made of jerky.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
He's
sure.
All, like, sinew and wires and stuff.
See, I knew that's where we're related. I knew you were going to say that word next. But,
sinew?
Yes. But, yeah, he did, like, you just assume, like, and I haven't seen him live, so you guys have an advantage on me there. But
I haven't seen him. I've seen him perform live on TV, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, shirtless.
At the very least, like even with the shirtless thing, like he just looks like my take on him is like the way that he carries himself. It's like he should probably be dead.
But,
He had like, the whole heroin addiction for a while. He's been known to like cut himself with shards of glass while on stage.
That's probably not good for you.
Yeah, anybody that stage dives that much, I'm sure like there's lots of broken bones and pulled muscles.
Well,
I've
heard that he may have one foot or one leg shorter than the other at this point. Like he's injured himself a lot, and he just doesn't seem to care. And it comes through in the music, you know.
He doesn't seem to care.
The music.
Well, then he just kind of
that one song where he talks about one leg being shorter than the other.
That one.
And enjoying taking his shirt off as he performs.
Yeah, sure.
He just kind of seems all balls out. Which I was tempted.
Never mind.
You remember how when we did Modern Lovers? You pulled up like Billboard charts for like when that came out. I'm tempted to do the same thing because I know it's all like, you know, B.J. Thomas and Glenn Campbell.
Those are exactly it's not too far off. I mean, this record came out in 73. I think the Modern Lovers came out in 74.
It was recorded
in 74.
When you can tell that like there is a little bit of a similar gene pool for those, like at least Genesis point for what ends up becoming, even though that, like, I mean, there's definitely some Velvet Underground that you can feel that it's in the DNA of a little bit of what he's doing.
I was talking with the girl the other day, and there's like a package that comes with, like, if you're into Iggy Pop, then you're probably also into David Bowie and Velvet Underground, MC5, and Talking Heads. Like, there's a package. Roxy Music, for some reason, gets in there.
Sure.
But, like, all of those, like, it's like a package that comes with, you know, if you're into one, you're into all the rest
Shit from the late 60s and 70s that became incredibly influential.
Kind of that kind of later on.
But didn't do shit for sales at the time.
Well, and it's like this ecosystem that sort of, like, goes from glam to punk, but, like, it's like punk.
T-Rex is in there.
A little bit of Sheen. Yeah, totally. Did you guys get did any of you guys come across the thing where, like, so I guess Bowie took a crack at the original mix, and we can talk about it on the other side if we actually want to play a track.
Well, let's get into Search and Destroy is the first song on the record.
Oh, I hear that's good.
you'll finally get to listen to it.
Yes, exactly.
We'll be right back.
lightweight son of the nuclear A-bomb. I am the world's forgotten boy, the one who searches and destroys.
So what now? What happens with the Iggy Pop years later?
So apparently when he did the mixes, the original mixes.
This is some funny shit, by the way.
Yeah. And it was like on the 20 track something.
Like,
I don't know.
24 track.
24 track. And he the way he mixed it down was he mixed all the instruments to one track.
Vocals on
all
one.
All the vocals
there
on one.
Essentially being like three tracks.
There were three tracks.
Yeah. Three out of 24.
Yeah.
He actually used.
Yeah. So basically the
I guess his management team was the same one that handled Bowie.
Yeah. And they were like, no.
Yeah,
he just didn't get it.
Let's fix this.
Yeah, tell the second half of the thing is like
Bowie, and he's like, "Well, here's all I've got to work with. I mean, I can turn this up a little bit."
He was like, "There's nothing to do."
Yeah. Like, what I love about the story though is Bowie refers to Iggy as Jim, because his real name is like James Osterberg.
Yeah,
which really led me down this path where I'm like, "Does anybody call Morrissey Steve?"
I hope so, because you know you would get the poutiest
answer. Like, oh yeah, he just fucking like death rays out of his eyes. What's up, Steve? But like, yeah, no, Iggy Pop is what, James Osterberg, I think is his real name.
James something.
It would be like the equivalent of that picture of Billy Corgan at Disney World. Like,
I don't know what you're talking about.
There's
a photo
of Billy Corgan at Disney World that got taken this year, and he's crammed into some little ride, and you know he's an unnaturally tall man, and his knees are up in his face. And he just looks like Jack Black at the Cubs game.
I was
like
Jack White
or the other one. Yes,
yeah,
Jack White.
That was some funny shit.
Jack
Gray.
Mark
just found the picture for.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. So it's not quite up in his face, but like equally, but totally sad.
And in this, in the
that's
same,
sad, that's like sad. Like Jack White had like the bitch face. Like that's like
sort of.
It looks like he's gonna cry.
In the same category as Glenn Danzig carrying home kitty litter. If you've seen a photo of that, but it's awesome.
Yeah. No, I have not seen that.
which takes me to and then
I love how we're talking about pictures on a on an audio show
on a podcast.
I know. Yeah. But it reminds me of what was the Todd Berry bit about seeing the
bassist
player
from Spin Doctors reading Bass Player magazine in Central Park.
Yeah. He's like, if ever there could be a more perfect time to be in the right place. He's like, I don't know what it is. Anyway. So Bowie took a crack at you know, quote unquote, heavy air quotes, mixing down these three tracks.
Iggy likes it.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I think he was happy with it. It sounds good. I can't tell that he only used three tracks.
One of the comments that I read was that they brought essentially the net of it was he brought up the vocals and he brought up the lead guitar and he kind of buried the rhythm section like a lot.
Well, there was lead guitar and vocals and everything else.
Yeah.
Everything else was on one channel.
Right.
Right.
There's only so much you can do.
So they later they gave Iggy Pop whatever label overlords, they gave him.
Was it the VMA?
CBS, actually.
Okay. Well, thank you. They were going to with Rhino, they were going to re-release this record, and I guess he's been pissed for years that they took his mixes away from him, and those tapes, actually those original mixes, have been like bandied about for
fans traded them apparently.
Yeah. So he went back in and remixed the record, and I know two things. One is that there was it's still considered one of the loudest records ever recorded, his remixes, and there was a lot of distortion that's been subsequently fixed in some remastering stuff. But I mean, he just pulled everything up into the red. That's the I listened to both mixes. And
simultaneously.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Because it makes sense to do it that way.
Yeah. One headphone, one mix, the other headphone, the other ear.
Yeah. Intense. Yeah.
The Bowie mixes were pretty crappy. I mean, comparatively. So there were some songs that sounded better. You know what it did sound like? I liked the low end and the loudness on the new mixes, but it sounded sort of like when you go back and listen to the Bowie mixes later, and it's like kind of the difference between like analog and digital. Like the Bowie mixes sound like you're listening to an LP, whereas the newer ones, the ones from 97, definitely have more low end and are a little shinier.
Let me ask you this. So officially, the Stooges put out a total of 4 records.
Well, there were 2 prior to this, and then I guess 1 after.
This isn't including any of the stuff where like they're going to put out a record with that Iggy Pop is not a part of or whatever. And they put out a total of 4 records. Like, does it seem like does that color at all the way that you like sort of take in this band?
Because there's less stuff.
Well, maybe because there's less stuff. So with the Modern Lovers, like to go back to that example, like really those guys have 1 true release, and then it's just a bunch of like backroom bullshit.
I don't think necessarily that colors it. You know what does color how I listen to this? There are a shit ton of bands in Austin that are really highly influenced.
Bands.
I mean, some great, some
all
not
over
so great,
the place.
But yeah, like.
Any garage
kids,
rock band.
Kids out there, go find the Obian Threes. They're terrific bands, and wow, they sound a lot like this. That's not me taking anything away from them. They're a great band.
When I was listening to it, I was remembering like when there was in the early 2000s, like 2003, I think, 2004, there were a lot of air quotes garage bands.
When you had like the Vines and the Hives and
all those,
that going on,
right? Yeah. But the thing is, I was listening to this today. I was like, this is what they sound like. I mean, you know, just poppier melodies. But I mean,
but can you imagine being an executive at a major record label and getting this in 1973 and going like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I mean that's the whole thing. You got to put yourself in the context again, like with the Modern Lovers.
And this reached number 52 on the pop charts.
It did?
Yeah,
I thought it didn't sell.
No, it sold, but like I'm sure that like radio programmers were going like, "Oh, you got me, dude. I don't know."
Yeah, I'm not sure what to do with this. Well, do you want to listen to another song?
Yeah, okay. So the other thing that I think is funny about this record, the only way that CBS would release the record is if they included 2 ballads. And I think it's pretty funny what is considered a ballad.
Well, I was going to say, which one was a ballad?
Well, there's 2 of them, and they wanted 1 on each side. 1 is Gimme Danger, the other is I Need Somebody. And I'm fine with either one of them because I think it's both pretty hilarious if you try to consider either one of these a ballad. But let's go with I Need Somebody. Yeah, that's pretty much along the lines of like Your Song by Elton John or, you know, Home Sweet Home by Motley Crue.
Yeah, I was thinking any John Denver song.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally. Like any song and then a John Denver song. Yeah, pretty much all, you know, of a similar ilk. That's as close as Iggy Pop's able to get.
Yeah,
like super Jim Croce territory.
Big time.
I have this mental image of like the record company executives telling him that they wanted him to record some ballads, and he just like looks at them like a dog, like tilting his head.
What was that? Showing a dog a card trick? Is that
yeah, it's the old Bill Hicks thing?
They just tilt their heads back and forth. Like I'm just pretty sure that's probably
so
what happened.
To him, he was just like, "Oh, okay, I can put acoustic guitar on it."
I do not think you know what that word
is. Is there even acoustic on that?
There is acoustic guitar on that, but that may be the only ballady thing about it.
You know, I listened to, this is like the same band, different record, obviously. I listened to Funhouse a little bit, the record before, and it's so superior sonically. I didn't listen to much of it because they had added a saxophone player for that album.
Oh, yeah, Death Knell.
And I don't do that. Yeah. And so, but the
I thought that was the name of the band.
Death Knell? No, Death Knell's the name of the sax player.
Okay. Yeah. Death Knell.
It's a stage name.
I
with Buckethead a whole lot.
I listened to the first two songs, and they were great, but it's kind of incredible to me that it's so superior sonically to this follow-up record. They were still on a major label at the time. Like, I guess at that, like, how did they fuck it up so bad?
Well, but here's the thing, like, they're so in theory, like, they're punk backed, right? So like punk bands that really like could keep it together over the long haul, would you think less of them? Like, they should flame out, right?
Like,
they should
Green Day,
like, exactly.
Yeah, I was gonna say
you
no
should
effects.
Think less of them, like.
Yeah, I mean, they seem Green Day seems like a bunch of nice dads.
Well, right. Well, and like, what have the Rolling Stones become? Like, you
a
know?
Corporation?
Exactly. So, like, you know, there is an evolution. I think that for a punk band to achieve, if we buy the fact that they're a punk band, for a punk band to achieve that, like, sort of goes against type.
I don't even know if that was a word yet in 1973.
No, but it does sound. I mean, incredible. Like, there, you know, the words proto-punk are, you know, often bandied about to describe.
Sure.
Well,
band,
I mean, it definitely is punk-ish, but
it sounds pretty punk to me.
Well, it does, but it was before, like, kind of the rules of punk had become codified. You know, like, now if you don't, like, have certain parameters in your
music.
Yeah,
basically, punk is the least punk music.
Yeah, it's the most regimented, rules-oriented.
It's true.
Genre of music anymore, and if you stray from 1, 2, 3, 4,
is that how they do it?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's
start
good.
My punk band tomorrow.
You know,
every punk band ever.
What was your punk band gonna be called? Tongue.
Yeah, Tongue. I was trying to figure out if I was gonna call it Thong or Tongue, but anyway, it's a whole other story.
Tongue Thong.
It could be the same, just depending on how you pronounce
it's
it.
It's true.
In each situation.
I just wanted to point this out real quick, in that I'm always so delighted when you do your mouth impressions on the show of various
my
things.
Impressions, like, of mouths?
No. When you use your mouth to you just like impersonate like instruments and stuff. What was the guy's name that was in Police Academy? Whatever it was, it
oh,
reminds
Michael
me,
something.
He reminds me a lot of him.
That guy.
I like it when you do that. Okay.
Also known as guy with a long career.
I bet that guy still gets residual checks from
no,
the
I'm sure
Police Academy
I'm sure
franchise.
Like, trapped in a closet in Vegas.
I want to see if you go. I haven't, not that I've seen
his mime bit.
Maybe
trapped in a closet.
He was doing
the police sirens until somebody shows up. Like, yeah.
I remember him doing like video games, but they were like beep boop beep video games. You know, this is like 1982, 83. Like, I'm just curious to go back and watch actually what he was doing.
At the time, people considered that kind of remarkable.
It was pretty remarkable.
He was way better than anything that I've come up with. I think I can sound vaguely like Dick Cavett if I want to, but
yeah, that's the point, right?
And you have.
It's not, yes, vaguely. I'm well aware that
Michael Winslow, I believe, is that gentleman's
name. I believe it is Michael Winslow. I love how whenever you said it, your eyes just lit up for a second. Okay, let's go to intermission. So I played a show with Derek Morris over the past weekend, and he was telling me he just had gotten off of tour, and he was regaling me with some tour stories.
He will forever be Drilling Rig Morris to me, by the way.
Yes. And
I don't know what that means, but
it's kind of a long story.
That's okay. Go, don't get back to the story.
so He was telling me, we were just talking tour stories and stuff while we were taking breaks, and he was saying, "Man, you know, one time he was on tour or played a show at I think the name of it was like called Damn I Love This Bar by Toby Keith, or you know, there's a song
I've heard that song when I unfortunately worked at a restaurant that piped in modern country,
and I think he has
love this bar.
Yeah, well, I think he has like he's like franchising those now. Anyway, he's like, if you ever get a chance to go online and look at the plate of nachos that they serve there, it is exactly the size of a plate of nachos you would think that would be served in a Damn I Love This Bar by Toby Keith. And basically, like, he puts his arms out and it looks like.
Like to bring a wheelbarrow out.
Yeah, like one of those large oval platters in restaurants, like about that big. Anyway, so it got me to thinking.
Gut size.
If you eat the whole thing, it's free.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, it looked like an exercise and.
Like a dare.
Yeah. An endurance exercise. So it started me thinking that we're, you know.
Yeah, I'm trying to see what this has to do with.
Yeah, so then I saw some there were some 9/11 documentaries on TV, and it just got me to thinking that
nachos and 9/11 documentaries. I'm following you.
It made me start thinking that it's been a while since I've heard "Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue" by Toby Keith, and with its classic line, "We'll put a boot in your ass. It's the American way." So
that is the American way, of course.
Yeah. So I thought that today we should listen to a Toby Keith song, "Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue." So,
thank you.
You're welcome. We'll listen to it and come back and talk about it.
All right.
My daddy served in the Army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard. Till the day that he died, he wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Uncle Sam put your name at the top of his list, and the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist, and the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you. Oh, brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue.
So years ago, this is before we met, my wife tells a story about being invited to a... it was like a 4th of July party that was put on by a semi-eccentric guy that went to the Rhode Island School of Design and moved to Texas like on the hottest day that had been recorded in Austin in like 100 years, and he thought his house was on fire the first day he moved here. Like, that's that kind of guy. Anyway, he threw a...
semi-eccentric?
Well, yeah. He's super talented artist, but he was also just ran to the beat of his own drummer. And he threw a 4th of July party where they stood out in his driveway and played Lee Greenwood's Proud to Be an American, like, over and over again, all day long. Like, largely ironic.
If you want me to leave your party, that's how you do it.
Anyway.
I mean,
it feels like there's a certain level of camp that I was like, I was watching this and I was like, where did your sleeves go, dude? Like,
I think he's wearing sweatpants at one point.
Well, and Mark pointed out he's got an American flag painted on his Japanese guitar.
Takamine guitar. I have no interest in discussing the red state, blue state implications.
Oh, sure.
There's way too much funny shit going on. However,
that may be the most Republican video I've ever seen.
Yeah, but
in my
here's an interesting thing. So he's from Oklahoma, but here's an interesting thing. I've read in several different. I got briefly obsessed with him about 12 years ago. Because of this song. It's a long story.
Awkward.
Yeah. And I know. Toby.
How many feet away can you be from him?
30. Yeah. So
I hope he's not near my garage.
My ankle bracelet will go off. So I read this in multiple articles that apparently, despite his reputation and his popularity amongst people that would go to those kinds of shows, he predominantly votes Democrat.
interesting.
Which is highly interesting.
Well, and I'm, like, say what you will, we have said plenty about modern country, about this kind of modern country. It's like those guys, if nothing, know how to play to that type of audience.
Yeah,
like,
and that's my point. It's so cynical. It becomes so cynical at that point. But
or just about, or wrote. Like, I don't know.
Right.
Like,
I mean, we'll both have it. Yeah. I mean, sure. I mean,
I just like really like the thought of the Statue of Liberty. Liberty with like clenched fist, shaking its fist.
It's like,
don't drop the flame.
Patriotism as commercialism.
Well, yeah. I guess maybe what I'm saying is like, okay, so the way that this video plays out, should you see it if you're listening at home?
Yeah, because you really should. I mean, there's no.
Well, like part of like so a big part of it is he's playing for the armed forces, and so it's a like it's a an audience of American service members. And at some point, they have little flags and like
bunch of like 22-year-old dudes with buzz cuts.
Yeah, yeah, sure. But anyway, yeah, I guess. Point being is like it is designed to be an anthem like for
rally the troops.
Yeah,
literally
patriotic anthem. Yeah. You know, like we're gonna put a foot in your behind.
No. It's
boot.
We'll put a boot in your ass because it's the American way.
A foot in your behind.
Yeah, I'm sure that was the original lyric that he came up with.
That would be the British version of that song.
Stuff my toe so far up your rectum.
That's like a. That's like the Dan Savage version of
maybe.
Could
be. Yeah. Anyway, but
Santorum. That's all I gotta say. Santorum.
Yeah, but anyway, like the net is like I think that it's it's an interesting song in terms of like what the theater is of it. But you know, clearly New Country will never be my bag, but
no.
Well, there was a period of, and I don't know when this was recorded, there was a period of like, I don't know, a good 6 months to a year after that horrific event where
the country was
just awash in this kind of
stuff. This was right around the time of the Iraq War, the second Iraq War, and I know this because the name of the album title that this song is on, it's called Shockin' Y'all, which is a play on the term
shock and awe.
Clever. Yeah. Yeah, I love the fact that basically it's primarily a performance video interspersed with shots of the Statue of Liberty and just all the just various and sundry patriotic
many flags.
But my favorite part about the video visually, because there's not going a lot going on visually.
Wardrobe.
Like at first,
wardrobe changes.
I thought it was his wardrobe. I thought somebody like had filmed it on their camera phone or something like.
He's like at sound check or something because he like yeah dude just threw on whatever
yeah it's, he just he's just not look he's at one point he has like a do-rag on and
well it also kind of occurred to me that it's like so he's in a room full of people who like have like their part of their job is like they have to be physically fit and they get tested on that shit all the time and like Toby Keith is on the couch a lot. Like a lot.
There's a lot of like, potato chips involved in that dude's diet.
Yeah, and you kind of get the impression that he's like, oh, fuck, I got to get to the venue. And he just picks something up off the floor.
His workout routine. His workout routine is referred to as free and easy.
Like, and he's got awesome like
12-ounce curls.
Maybe, yeah.
He's got really great wavy, like almost platinum blonde hair. Like obviously dyed, like a really bad dye job. It's good times. I enjoyed Toby Keith.
Yeah. Anyway, like, yeah, but in terms of like the camp, well, the guy can do the camp.
That's why those nachos are so damn big, man. I mean, that's Toby style right there. You can tell.
Get small, medium, or Toby style.
You're gonna want. What's the old Bill Hicks pick? You're gonna want to pull your truck around back. I'm gonna start the pump.
Well, you're welcome, guys. And that's 3.5 minutes of your life that you will not get back.
If only 3.5 minutes.
Did it feel longer than that?
Yeah, I'm going to like wake up in a cold sweat tonight.
Yeah. Well, I also wanted to find something that really fit in with...
Oh, yeah. That's the dream build,
the
really.
Stooges.
Like Iggy and the Stooges and Toby Keith.
I wonder how Iggy would approach the topic.
Yeah. By the way, Mark, if you can find the needle scratch moment right at that. Like, yeah.
Okay. Well, let's go. We'll go back and talk about some Stooges. Okay, so Raw Power, the actually it's the technically it's the third Stooges record.
It is the third Stooges. The first two but were titled, well, the first one's titled The Stooges, the second was Funhouse, but they were both credited to
The Stooges.
Stooges.
And this was Iggy and,
The Stooges.
Okay, let me, this is probably as good a time as any to share a tiny bit from our friends at Pitchfork, who I was kind of shocked. This does not get a solid 10.0 high five retro
cum stain,
like watercolor.
Water, give it a few years.
Like a Zen watercolor situation. But it's an 8. They give it an 8.3.
It's pretty high.
It's pretty high. And they're pretty stingy with modern work. And so anyway, it strikes me interesting. But anyway, they said a little bit about this record. Because the Stooges heard on Raw Power were not the same band that produced 1969's self-titled debut or 1970's Funhouse, but rather some mutant zombie version, the Stooges dropped from Elektra. Iggy exploited a solo artist deal with David Bowie's management to reassemble his band around new guitarist James Williamson, pushing Ron Ashton to bass, and rebranding the Stooges as Iggy and the Stooges. And in accordance with those changes, Bowie's and we talked a little bit about this, the treble heavy Raw Power mix that thrust Iggy's vocals and Williamson's searing solos miles out in front of the rhythm section to the point of practically writing off, Ron and his brother Scott Ashton out of the set. And then I'll share one more thing. He says, all of which has made Raw Power the most contentious release in the Stooges catalog, a fact that Iggy himself effectively owned up to in 97 when he released an exponentially louder and beefier new mix that took the album's title to literal extremes and in the process horrified audiophiles with a distaste for digital distortion.
That's pretty much what we were talking about earlier. Can I comment on not only is Pitchfork, and don't get me wrong, I read a lot of their reviews of new music.
Oh, sure.
We pretty much have the same taste, but they do infuriating things like that. When they wrote that, like one of their reviews from 30 years later on a piece of sheet of
the pavement review.
Legal paper. They do one of the things that's
they're a little cutesy sometimes.
It's infuriating that like what is the difference? Can somebody parse this out for me between an 8 and an 8.3? Review? I mean, I know it's on a 10-point scale in between.
Well, the answer is 0.3.
Yes. Again, like that's about as cutesy as it is to say, like, 8.3.
I know.
Well,
yeah,
it's about as exact as Robert Parker's wine ratings. You know?
Right,
like,
yeah.
I mean,
it's all arbitrary. Right?
Ray Parker?
Pardon?
Ray Parker?
No, I know
Robert Parker.
Robert Parker.
If Ray Parker Jr. had his own like,
I would read his
wine.
I would read his wine ratings.
What are you gonna drink?
that's what they should call it, actually. AV Club does like an A or an A minus. Like, what's the fucking difference? You know, like between an A and an A minus.
Yeah.
Like,
no. It does feel a little bit arbitrary, and it's part of the reason why I flog those guys a little bit, even when we share some of their stuff. And really, kind of, you know, I guess maybe the real reason that I sort of re-canvassed some old ground is Ron Ashton. Like, so he was the lead guitarist for the first two records, and his brother's the drummer, and then he somehow or another got pushed to play bass on this record, and they brought in a new lead guitarist. And the guy, like, essentially, when they reformed, Ashton was again the lead guitarist. And is one of those guys who, like, shows up on the Rolling Stone list as, like, one of the greatest guitarists of all time and, like, whatever. Like,
it definitely changes the sound a lot. That's the sound of the bands.
Does Iggy play an instrument? I've never seen him.
Dude, there's no way he could anyway. I mean, look at all
the stage
like,
is
gyrating.
His instrument, Ryan. The stage.
Yes, all the world's stage.
He's rubbing, like, peanut butter and shit all over his body, like, while he's stage diving. I mean, there's no time for the dude to pick up a guitar or anything. I guess, like, you could probably, he could like, pick up a cowbell occasionally, but he doesn't.
I think there is cowbell in the
other
ballad.
Okay, well, then maybe he does.
Yeah.
Okay, well, color me wrong, I guess. Like, I don't know. I mean, maybe. There's an I guess in there.
But anyway, so I guess somewhere along the way, Ron Ashton died, I guess, in 2009.
And then the other Ashton brother just died, too.
Did he just die? Yeah. So, anyway, that part I did not know. But I do know that it's been kind of interesting. Like, one of the articles that I read sort of talked about like the way that different bands look at different eras of this band, and they were talking about how like there are certain bands when they would play with Iggy and like would play only the like only the first couple of records, and then they mentioned it was like the Chili Peppers and somebody else played like did a couple of songs with them and like would only do stuff from this record forward.
Well, this so, is the record like, that to me is like always I've always just kind of heard about yeah. like it being like kind of this legendary thing, and I think it's a fucking solid record.
Yeah.
I consider myself to be relatively well read in music history. I have a pretty wide-ranging taste in music. And I had always thought that Lust for Life was a Stooges song. It's just solo Iggy Pop.
No, it's good old solo Iggy.
You thought it was a Stooges song, too.
No, I didn't.
I thought you said you thought that... Oh, no, I Want to Be Your Dog.
I Want to Be Your Dog is a Stooges song.
Yeah. That's right. Okay. Well, never mind. I always thought Lust for Life was a Stooges song. So, oops, my bad.
All right, well, kids, I think I've got one more that I want to dial up here, which is my favorite song on the record, and it's just got, like, a ridiculous riff that just doesn't go away, and that's going to be Shake Appeal.
One, two, three, four.
So Jim seems to have a lot of energy in that song.
Do you think people call him Jimbo?
I bet not.
Hard to say, man.
I think that would be pretty cool like, if
David Bowie was the only one who called him Derivations of Jim.
Yeah, if David Bowie's, that's
the
all.
The Jimster. it's the Thin White Duke. What's up?
That's so weird. Oh, by the way. And we won't.
That was the worst David Bowie impression.
What if David Bowie really talk like that, like off the mic? Because he's always doing characters.
He's all suave and shit.
What if he's not even British in the first place? He's from like Topeka, Kansas.
So weird. This is all so weird. Anyway,
check it out, man. It's my hot wife, Eamon.
And he like skateboards to work.
Yeah. Yeah, clearly, we're all five. Anyway, so that was quite something. I don't know, Ryan, what was your take?
I just think it's got a killer riff. Mark pointed out that he thinks it sounds kind of 50s.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I can see that. There's more
it's
of a
that chunky
bluesy
guitar
element
yeah.
in there too. You know, like the it's not 12-bar blues, but it definitely has like a structure in there, and it just repeats that riff over and over again, and with the hand claps and all that stuff. Yeah, I could see a little Chuck Berry influence.
Just out of curiosity, was that another one of the ballads? Because
that was not a ballad.
Oh, okay.
Also, the ballads are not ballads.
that song is kind of more of a ballad than the one we listened to before in some ways.
Well, I don't know. I just found myself wistful, and I had to pull myself out of that.
I did notice your faraway stare.
Yeah, it was a faraway. Yeah. It's a gaze, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... I had to pull that back. Anyway, excited, and thank you for sharing that song with us.
Oh, well, I'm happy to help.
Yeah.
And the whole record is a good record. Like
eight songs, too.
Quick. Yeah, and the one before was the same thing. I think it's like seven songs, and, you know, that's what an
barely,
LP should be.
It's barely an LP.
There should be five songs on each side.
It's really just a P, if you think about it. Like, it's not that long.
It's
not a long player. Yeah, it's just a player.
It's a player.
But, yeah, yeah. So, anyway, but I do think this is another one of those records. Like, this is actually, like, kind of a guilty pleasure of doing this podcast is, like, we do occasionally get to roll around and some of this stuff that it's, like, you kind of feel like you should know it. And if for some reason that you don't, it's like, okay, well, now I've got that in my...
Oh, I'm sure, like, there are people out there listening to this going, like, you're a dork, man. How do you not know this?
I feel that. Sure. Well, I felt so... I didn't know a minute on it, and that's crazy.
No, I didn't know any of it.
That's crazy.
I mean, I've probably heard something of it at, like, Casino.
I was
going to
say, we probably had late-night drinks at Casino El Camino, and somebody put it on the jukebox, you know, put in, like, $2 worth of songs, you know.
Yeah, but as far as, like, sitting and actually, like, paying attention, no. Like, nothing.
It was good. It was entertaining. I mean, it's not the best record I've ever, though a lot of people think it is.
If you look at like the
accolades, Johnny Marr, Morrissey.
Yeah, if you go to like Wikipedia and it shows like the how it's rated, I think the lowest rating is like 9 out of 10 stars or whatever.
Good record.
Chris Gow was all into it. And
well, Chris was it? Oh no, the one
oh,
before.
God,
Chris
we should have read that. I'm sure that would be just that guy. Is incapable of writing, like, if he really loves something, is incapable of not writing over-the-top, effusive praise.
The man is
like,
fond of his hyperbole.
Oh, yeah, I'd say. Like, crying out loud. Yeah, anyway. Now I have to go find that.
All right, well, if you happen to do it,
yeah,
well,
I guess
still
you can
around
just,
here.
Just save it for next week.
Okay, yeah, I'll save it for next week.
Okay, well, that was fun. Yeah. I liked
Power.
It very much. That's a good. That would be a good album to put on in the background, like at a party, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Unlike
Blood
on the Tracks.
The party. If it's a hip hop pool party, you probably don't want to play that.
No.
If it's a
kid's birthday party,
if it's you know like a little girl's tea party, probably not that appropriate.
That's probably not the album you would choose. Yeah. That's true. Okay, yeah. I stand corrected.
Okay.
Chuck
E. Cheese, like probably not that good.
Well, maybe.
City Alderman nominating party, probably not. This is going to be this record either.
Fair enough. Okay, I stand corrected.
Okay.
Kevin, you have a current affair this week?
I do.
What are we going to hear?
Okay, so there's a new track by the bassist and band leader of Tokyo Police Club has got a new track out. And so we're going to give that a whirl.
Sounds good.
Well, leave it to a current affair staff to ruin my week on a Monday.
Listen, Michelle, he may never come back. But why do you care? You're a beautiful girl. And everyone seems to have found their sweetheart. Well, I know you're starting to think when everyone acts like they're on a postcard. Why is it your heart that has to sink? Well, I don't make the rules. I just play along. And I can't break the rules. Oh. She had, and everyone's carving their name on a sidewalk. Well, I know you're feeling an ache when everyone's words are nothing but sweet talk. Why is it your heart that has to break? Well, I don't make the rules. I just play along.
So that was Dave Monks, who is the bassist and lead guy for Tokyo Police Club. This is his solo effort. And, we got a chance to watch the video. And
solid tune.
Yeah.
Background music.
The
but
timbre of his voice reminds me a lot of They Might Be Giants. I'm not
I don't get
Jones.
That at all.
I do, but I wouldn't have unless you said that. Like, there's kind of a reedy quality to it that.
Well, and I could see, like, so, okay, yeah, so the reedy quality thing is totally true. I think that They Might Be Giants is, like, outside of Primus, maybe, like, one of the most annoying bands on the planet.
Oh, I'm
like,
with you on Primus. I actually like They Might Be Giants.
I'm with you on Primus. They're unlistenable, but I really like They Might Be Giants.
No, I like They Might Be Giants quite a bit.
But now I know one I'm going to be picking. Oh,
sure, whatever. Like, yeah, that's fine. We can do an hour on that. That's fine. I've been drugged through the mud before. We've had our Bon Jovi day. So, like, anyway, but yeah, no, I do get the Reedy thing, though. I think that that's not inaccurate.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't an unpleasant song.
And it's a little angular, like that's sort of the that guy's way.
There's just not there's nothing, like, for me personally, there's just not a lot going on lyrically that was interesting. But not that didn't bother me as much. It's just because it was kind of a nice, pleasant background song. Like, this would be fine for your daughter's tea party kind of music, you know.
Or I don't know that it would. I
mean, no, okay, right.
It wouldn't be offensive, but it might not.
I'm just
be
saying, like, if you were listening to that in the background while they're having,
does she have a taste in music now? Like, I mean, is she old enough
it's
to
probably like Disney princess songs
and
shit.
Shane is not incorrect on that assessment. Yeah,
finally right about something today.
Yeah. No, it's all good. So,
the video was cool. They played with forced perspective a little bit.
I thought, where he does the thing where he's like turning the Ferris wheel with his.
Yeah, but also, and, like, there were, like, large, like, broad expanse, like, he's standing at the seaside, and then he's playing in front of this, like, beautiful birch, playing piano in front of this.
Some definite Wes Anderson influence in it.
I didn't, and, you know, and I hadn't thought about it that way, but I think there's probably some truth to that.
He plays some air piano. You don't see a lot of that in videos.
You don't.
No,
And then he does some pantomime where he's attempting to pull the camera towards him, but it never actually goes toward him.
Well,
he's right. like
failed pantomime.
It's like he throws a pantomime lasso around the camera that's filming him, and then pulls it toward him, but it never moves and goes toward him.
Well, the camera's like, what the fuck are you doing?
What are you doing, dude?
Yeah. Now, one of the comments that I read, you know, was just talking about how, like, it seems like a lot of that video is like a little bit of B-roll, which, like, for the people who don't know that term at home, is like just anything.
Stock footage,
like stuff that it gets shot as filler. And so, like, yeah, there's some of that. But anyway, mostly I just thought it was interesting for me as somebody who has enjoyed some Tokyo Police Club stuff in the past to see what that guy was up to. And that song actually, like, that the release on that just went out today. So
this is really a very current affair.
Hopefully it'll be, you can't get it, like, it's not like
any more currenter than this affair.
It's like the opposite of what
current
Ryan,
shit.
Ryan fucking shows up with, like,
six-year-old
seven-year-old song. Yeah. It's new to me.
Hey, man, I just found it.
It's not the way it works, dude.
Anyway, yeah, so that was Dave Monk's new release.
All right, fun show. Wait, what was that? Fun show.
Shane just turned into Punchy the Clown.
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
What do we have next week?
Oh, yeah. So we talked about this.
Kevin,
so we're gonna
got
do,
very excited.
Well, it took me a sec. Well, it took me. I was like, I don't know. And then I was like, oh yeah, we totally talked about this. So I got to thinking, and I was like, there's. I feel like there's a record out there that we haven't covered that I don't know that well, but that was ubiquitous, and I didn't hate it. And thought it would be interesting enough to go back into. And that turned out to be Dove's The Last Broadcast.
Oh, right. I remember now.
And so, yeah. So we're gonna tackle that next go around.
Yeah. It's been a little while since
I owned that at one point, but I don't know it that well.
I saw that.
I've never owned it. And I know a couple of tracks.
I think you may have even, like, given it to me for my birthday.
Maybe I did. Yeah. But it was probably for that reason that it was everywhere at that time. Mm-hmm. So
I saw that show, but I one-eyed my way through it. I was so drunk that things were blurry. So,
well, let's do it crystalline.
Yes. Yeah. Because that's how we work.
Sure.
Around here.
Yes.
We're gonna do in 2 weeks. Stevie Wonder Songs in the Key of Life.
Nice.
Oh, it's good. I hear he's talented.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. We'll see, I guess.
Okay.
Right? Okay. Well, this was fun, and let's just rip the Band-Aid off.
Thanks for coming back to the garage, boys.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
in
it was
the
quite
garage.
Pleasant.
Yeah.
It was
it's not super crazy hot. We didn't know where we were going to be. We landed somewhere good.
Yeah. Everybody's happy.
There were beers?
Yeah, there were. Anyway, this is going to be fun. Looking forward to next week and for tonight and for the foreseeable future. I'm Kevin.
I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Mark.
And this is Somebody Likes It.